Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Retro Raw here on Inside the Ropes. We have so much content we throw at you all the time. It's a surprise that you have time to listen to it. My name is Kenny McIntosh, and I'm joined as always on the Retro pay-per-view train, dragged kicking and screaming, but she wouldn't let anybody else do it, so it's a really problematic position for me to be in. Sondra. Hi, Sondra.
Hi, Kenny. It's true. You know, Retro Raw is, it's kind of a blessing and a curse, right? Like, Retro Raw has given me this love for Kane. Like, it's just reignited my love for Kane to where now when I watch Kane on regular Raw, like current everyday Raw here in the year 2017, I'm like, Kane is the coolest. Kane is the absolute coolest because he's the coolest in 1997 and 2017. And I don't know how to deal with that, but it's kind of fun. So at least Retro Raw has given me that, I guess. It's also given me a lot of problematic stuff that I'm kind of annoyed about this week, so we'll get into that.
I can imagine that number one's going to be, where was Karate Kid Fighters? Or Karate
Kid yeah, that's one of my questions. Why was there no Karate Fighters this week? I was all excited. I was like, oh, I'm going to watch Retro Raw. I'm going to be motivated to watch Retro Raw. I'm going to get it watched. I'm going to wake up early. I'm going to watch this show so that I can record with Kenny. And you know what I didn't get to see? Any Karate Fighters tournament advancement. Not happy about it.
Yeah, I don't really know why it's not. I assume it's back next week. I don't really know. Yeah, the thing is, I never saw them at the time, so it's all new to me as we go along here. As always, the Shotgun Saturday Night tapings that we had this week for the night before Survivor Series, we had Henry Godwin and the Road Dogg with Billy Gunn and Phineas in their corner against Blackjack Bradshaw and Thrasher with Wyndham and Mosh in the corner.
Why?
Then Henry Godwin and Road Dogg got the win. Mankind defeated the Sultan, and Scott Taylor and Taka Michinoku beat El Mosco and Pantera. So that was your Shotgun.
Rush out to see that one, everyone.
Now, up until this point, people did not know that Bret Hart was leaving the WWF. The Observer noted here for the first time that Bret is leaving, but at this point, it's being put out there to people like Dave Meltzer and Wade Keller and all these different people that, oh, Bret's chose to leave. Bret's chose, he's given his notice, he's going to WCW, he'd been more and more unhappy with the creative direction of the company. There was part of that, but obviously he was going to stay. And WWF was trying to keep it under lids so that they could get through Survivor Series. And then Bret would do like an interview the next night or an announcement and forfeit the championship. But the WWF did release a... after the story got out that Bret was leaving, which was the day after this Raw actually came out, WWF released a statement saying that they were giving Bret Hart the opportunity to explore other options. Now, part of the problem, which I think probably is part of the reason why Montreal happened, was because the Nitro that was on opposite this show, Eric Bischoff teased a big surprise on next week's show, which was to be the announcement of Bret joining the NWO. Although the NWO thing would end up being a swerve, he'd be a babyface. But that was that. Bischoff couldn't have done it. The contract would not have allowed him to do it. And Bret was going to continue working with the WWF through to the December 7th pay-per-view in Springfield, Massachusetts. And he would start with WCW the day after. So Bret was willing to work through to that pay-per-view. He was happy to do anything. That's kind of where everything was at this point.
So at this point, they're planning on having him around for like the next month or so.
Yes. It's only a couple of days after this where everything starts to fall apart. Sean also... I'm going to read this, though. It's quite long, but I feel like it's worth reading on the podcast, okay? So...
Okay.
Just a few days before, in the Observer it says, just a few days before Bret made his decision to leave, which Bret didn't make the decision to leave, he had to leave, but Bret had written an article, he wrote a column in the Calgary Sun, and this is what he wrote leading into Survivor Series. Here it is. It's quite long, but I think it's good. Shawn Michaels, you are a disgrace to professional wrestling. It amazes me that there was a time I actually thought you'd be the guy who'd come up behind me and carry the ball when my time comes to retire. Now when you're behind me, I have to make sure I don't bend over. I'm a second-generation wrestler. Like a lot of second-generation wrestlers, I've paid my dues. The way you're degrading the business makes me sick and breaks my heart. That's not what the Heartbreak Kid was supposed to mean. I told you and Vince told you to leave our families out of this. So you got on Raw and said that my father is dead. This time you're so far over the line, there's no coming back. Every so often after you shoot off your mouth, you come to me backstage with a lame apology and a limp handshake. Oh, Brett, my mouth always gets me in trouble when I get going out there. You know I didn't mean nothing by it. Don't bother this time. I'm not buying it. I would not embarrass my father, who is not only very much alive, but is still tougher today at 83 and more of a man than you will ever be, as you have embarrassed your father with your degenerate behaviour. How humiliating for your poor father to have to explain your lewd gestures to his friends. You don't respect anybody. You don't respect anybody, do you? What does Jose Lothario think of how you've made pornography out of what he taught you? Shawn Michaels, you are nothing more than a whore for this business. You called me a paper champion because it bothers you that my contract is worth more than you and the whole of D-Generation X put together. You said I wrestle because I need the money, but you wrestle because this business needs you. You're a festering, cancerous tumour in this business. After WrestleMania 12, I went home for a while to give you the chance to become the man. Because as long as I'm around, you'll never be the man. You were so bad at being the man that WWF and WCW had the biggest bidding war in wrestling history to get me to come back. You'd have the World Championship belt, but you don't. What do you have besides a big mouth and a bad attitude? Shawn Michaels, you said that beating The Undertaker makes you an icon. Not taking anything away from Taker, but you weren't the first guy to beat him, you just did it too late. You said you're the only icon that can still go, not like the fossils. You're so beat up from taking completely overdone bumps like a Mexican jumping bean that you can't even work a full schedule like the older guys. You only wrestled it once a month and you're proud of that. Then people who think they know more about this business than they actually do write about what a hard worker you are. Anyone can work hard once a month. You've barebacked your way to main event matches and they give you the best guys in the business to make you look good. So you and your boyfriend Hunter think I'm too old. Hunter said he's bigger than me in more ways than one, and then you pointed at Hunter's crotch and said he could put an eye out with that thing. Thanks for admitting that you know what Hunter has in his pants, so how come I have four kids and all you have is each other? I'm not the one shooting blanks, by the way. You both looked very comfortable eating bananas together on Raw. Lots of parents tell me they won't let their kids watch the shows anymore because of you, and they don't watch either because you're such an asshole. People are shutting the show off because of you. It took so long to make wrestling into family entertainment. Thanks for setting the business back 50 years. You're the only one who's confusing expansion and destruction, not me. You, Sean, are the destruction of this business. You make me sick. You said you're the best sports entertainer in the world. Don't even think about saying you're a wrestler. What I do is an art form, and what you do, what is it you do anyway? Because it's not pro wrestling anymore. You called the WWF World Championship a tin title, but you're only saying that because you don't have the belt. When you did have it, you treated it like garbage and threw it away. So now you want to try and win the title of Survivor Series. You'd better reconsider that, because when I get my hands on you, it's going to make the beating I gave you in the locker room last June look like a warm-up. After that little scuffle, you went running to Vince, complaining that the work conditions in the WWF are unsafe. The only thing unsafe about the working conditions in the WWF is you, Sean. You've gotten in the ring so pilled up lately that you can't even talk straight on TV. You'd better shake the cobwebs free before you get in the ring with me at Survivor Series. This business has been my mistress for my whole life, and I love her. You're raping her and taking her dignity away. Don't count on my reputation for professionalism saving your ass at Survivor Series. You're the one who threw the rulebook out the window. The 17 stitches you got Hell in a Cell are nothing compared to what's coming at Misery in Montreal.
Damn, that's a lot to unpack, isn't it?
Want to talk about that?
I mean, a lot of it is stuff that, you know, we've been saying on the show. Like, yeah, Shawn Michaels is an asshole. Yeah, Shawn Michaels and all of the drugs, it's a problem. It's a very clear problem. Like, you can tell that he is not in his... He's not in a great state when he's coming out to perform, and that's dangerous, right? Like, that's dangerous for him, and that's dangerous for other performers. Bret Hart's rampant homophobia strikes again, right? Like,
It's difficult because, like, so, I'm not saying homophobia is okay at all, but, like, the thing is, like, Sean, it's not like Sean is just being accused of being, like, Sean is doing things to get that reaction.
Oh, he absolutely is. I mean, it's on the show that we're going to talk about in a bit. I mean, Sean is very clearly doing things to elicit that reaction. Sean and Hunter both, they know what they're doing. At least they should. I mean, it's not very difficult to figure out. But yeah, I mean, the vitriol there, you can tell, like, Bret Hart really, really loathes this guy. And I can see why. I really can see why. And, you know, he has a point when, you know, kids aren't being allowed to watch the show. I can see why kids might not be allowed to watch this show anymore. And I think that sucks because one of my favorite things is having kids that really, really like wrestling. And I know we're going to get into the Attitude Era, which is, it's not a kid friendly program. And I know that's the direction they're going. And it was when WWF was at its peak, but I don't know. It's not something that I necessarily love. Like, I don't like DX. I don't like what they're doing, and I don't like Shawn Michaels on this show. So I'm inclined to agree with Brett about a lot of stuff. I think he's still kind of stuck up his own arse too. Like, he's definitely on his moral high ground, and he's definitely like, you know, the business can't change and it can't evolve and it can't become, you know, what he wants it to be, what he wants it to be. But I don't know, like, there's obviously very real hatred there, and I can see why things got so intense leading into Montreal.
And I'd totally forgotten that last week with Bret Hart and Ken Shamrock, that was the last appearance on Raw for Bret the Hitman Hart until 2010.
Wow.
Because he's not on this show, and then yeah. Survivor Series is his last show, so... let's get into the show, though. So we've got Jim Ross and Jim Cornette on commentary as Vince McMahon is in the ring introducing Stone Cold Steve Austin. The fans are just love Austin. It's just, you know. So Vince kind of has taken us back to what happened last week. Shows us what he did to Ahmed Johnson. And then, you know, Austin says, you know, I don't have a beef with Ahmed. I just want Owen Hart. Ahmed was in the wrong place at the wrong time. You know, he said he'd kick Ahmed's ass. They were in the ring together. And then here comes Ahmed Johnson, who, like, has regained the glory of Ahmed Johnson here.
I mean, those light jeans that he's wearing, those light, very tight jeans, that tight red shirt. He's wearing a bum bag. I mean, what a look. Like, that's Ahmed Johnson. He's back.
Cowboy boots.
Yeah.
And then he comes in the ring. And, like, what's great about this was, it reminded me a little bit of this. It reminded me a little bit of Lesnar and Goldberg this year. Remember when they had all those like guys like in between them? Like, because the thing is, like, Ahmed Johnson, Steve Austin, if they want to fight, they're going to fight. So you need to put people in between them to stop them.
They're both mental. So it made sense that Vince McMahon was like, keep an eye on him, keep an eye on him. And he kept like telling the refs to keep an eye on Austin because you never know when Austin's going to strike. And you never know what Ahmed's going to do because he's insane. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, it did have kind of an electric feel to it. I was like, I kind of want to see them face off. I kind of do want to see them fight, actually.
And so, basically, Ahmed's saying, you know, if I'm here to fight. Let's put our gear on. Let's go tonight. And then Austin responds. He's in. We've got the match coming up. I remember being so fucking excited at this. Stone Cold Steve Austin rising to the top. The return of the glory of Ahmed Johnson. Amazing.
Amazing. We'll yeah, I guessed what was going to happen later on. I mean, we'll get to it, but this face-off was awesome. And Ahmed Johnson coming out and cutting an unintelligible promo about how he doesn't have fans and he doesn't have to have fans because since he was 13, he's been on his own and he wants to fight and he'll stand up for himself and all this stuff. Like, he seemed like Ahmed Johnson again, finally. And then as they were showing the footage of Austin studying Ahmed last week, Steve Austin's just being a dick and going, wham! Wham! Like, every time they show the stunner, and Vince, like, he doesn't do it the last time, and Vince looks at him and he goes, wham, right? And Austin's like, yeah, yep, I did that. He's so good.
So we have the beginning of the light heavyweight title tournament, and our first match is Super Loco, who you might recognize as Super Crazy.
Because, you know, that is what Super Loco means.
Against Aguila. My favorite bit of this whole match. So Brian Christopher's on commentary. Super Loco goes for this move where he's like gonna try and do like some sort of like summer like flip somersault thing out of the ring, and then he just like flips and gets caught in the ropes and just bounces back and forth. And the best thing was Brian Christopher just cackles on commentary. It's so good.
It
I
is
loved
so good.
It
I mean,
so much.
Super Loco is very, very bad in this match. Like, very, very bad. Is Super Crazy always this bad?
No, I don't know why he's this bad here.
He was terrible. Bad. Like, he was trying to do, like, almost like, you know, when Andrade Cien Almas does his, like, Tranquilo thing, or I know that, you know, other people do that too, but whatever. Like, he's trying to do some sort of fancy rope maneuver, and just, I mean, when we say gets caught up in the ropes, like he gets tied up in the ropes and then just falls down. And then later on, he tries to do a springboard that just looks super messy and he looks like he's going to fall over. Like he doesn't look much steadier on his feet than Miguel Perez at this point. And, you know, it was an okay. Like when he had Aguila in the bow and arrow, the submission hold, it looked like he couldn't hold it properly. Like, cause normally you try to hold the person in the hold, but he was like rolling around as though he couldn't hold him up. I don't know if he was just supposed to roll around. It was really strange, but I mean, the match was, it just wasn't that good. They were really building up Aguila though, like really building him up. Like he's the next prospect. He's 19 years old. He's really, really good. And he had some cool moves and everything, like some corkscrew moonsault stuff and the cool moonsault off the top and everything. But I've never heard of him and they're building him up like he's a big guy. Like, are they trying to sign him? Is he signed?
Aguila is going to be part of the light heavyweight division, and Aguila is really good. See, when
we
finally get Aguila and Takemichinoku,
I bet that's going to be really good.
Really good, really good.
Because I like some of the stuff in the match. Like, I love lucha arm drags. Like, I love that kind of stuff. So that part of the match was fun. It's just Super Loco was atrocious.
Well, you could see Aguila trying. Like, Aguila's not like slowing down. So Aguila's trying to get all his shit in. And then
it felt kind of rushed.
Yeah, and then Super Loco just did not know what was going on.
No. He wins with a Twisted Bliss. Like, yes. I don't know what he calls it, but it's Alexa Bliss's finisher.
He does not call it the Twisted Bliss, but yes, he does win with that. So Aguila advances.
Christopher's like, I have had enough of Super Aguila or whatever his name is, because Brian Christopher can't be bothered to learn either of their names because he's Brian Christopher, of course.
Of course. The other three first round matches are Taka Michinoku against Devon Storm, Eric Shelley against Jerry Lynn, and Flash Flanagan against Brian Christopher. So we're going to have those matches, and the final will be at the December In Your House pay-per-view, so we'll see that. Now up next is something to fucking unpack. We have an interview with Jim Ross conducted with Goldust and Marlena. They're both dressed out of character, but playing their characters, which is bizarre.
Dustin, what is Goldust bandana? Like, what even is
Dustin
that?
Dustin looks like he's just went through a bereavement. And Marlena's fine. She's like, you know, it was just so important to get back home to family. And they're talking about the Pillman thing, but not mentioning Pillman.
But you have to say, though, Kenny, I mean, they introduced this. They introduced it before the light heavyweight match where JR talks about an interview where Goldust rapes his wife's dignity. He raped his wife of her dignity and has destroyed his family and his marriage. And I'm like, wait, what is coming?
But you have to sell what's going to. What I always think is really funny is like they're like, why are you making us wait? Why are you building it up?
Yeah.
If a woman's been raped of her dignity, just go, well, we better put that at the top there.
Right. But then, I mean, when JR is introducing this interview again, he says, you know, he raped his own wife's dignity. And I'm like, do we need to use the rape word here? Like, do we really need to use the rape word, especially when it comes to Marlena, who was raped by Brian Pillman in storyline? Like, it's just a lot to handle. Like, I really don't like that we're just being thrown out there and being like, oh, well, there we are, I guess. And then, you know, I don't know why they're all dressed in black. Like, Marlena is almost dressed the way that Pillman dressed her, which is strange. And Goldust, I mean, he doesn't so much look like he's been through a bereavement as he looks like a grumpy teenager who has been told that he can't, like, buy a motorcycle or something. Like, and he just hates his parents because the world just doesn't understand his angst. And that's exactly how he comes off here. You know, he's looking surly the whole time. And Marlena's trying to be like, yeah, no, it's really good to be home to my daughter and Dakota's starting preschool. And, you know, because JR asks how Dakota's doing. And Marlena's like, oh, you know, she's, you know, don't get me started because I'll talk about my daughter. And, you know, they had to tell Dakota that mommy went on a long vacation, which is uncomfortable, right? And she's like, I mean, how do you explain it to a 4-year-old or however old she is? You know, she doesn't want to hurt her daughter emotionally. And that's sweet. You know, like she doesn't want to be like, well, mommy got kidnapped and raped. And that's where I was for a month.
Well, here's my other problem, right? So they're talking, you know, Marlena's talking about how, you know, she's happy to be home and they get to have pizza night and she's with her two most important people and all that. And then Dustin all of a sudden just says, you shut up, you know, I'm sick of listening to you talk. And he just starts cutting this promo on her and she's like, what? And he's like, you know, you hold me back. You know, I've had to live in your shadow. I've had to do everything that you wanted me to do. just like my dad. I live for my dad. I now have to live for you. And, you know, while you were gone doing God knows what, I wasn't home playing Mr. Mum. I was, you know, I went out and found what I was looking for. Someone that
Which, by the way, who was taking care of that little girl then? If he was like, you think I was at home playing Mr. Mom, I wasn't. And I'm like, well, what did you do with your daughter then?
So Terry starts to get upset, as you would. And she's like, why are you doing this here now? And he's like, because I can't do this with you anymore. I don't love you anymore. I'm starting my life over. I've found someone else. And I'm, you know, and he takes off his wedding ring and says, you know, you can take this ring, you can take her marriage, and you can shove it up your ass. And then he walks
He even
out.
Says, and you can take Marlena, and you can shove it up your ass.
Mm-hmm. Now, the one thing I would say... And I very much sympathize with Teddy here. She's been through the fucking... She's been through a year. But...
Yeah.
Couldn't you see that there was something wrong with him? Because I saw it as soon as the segment started. Like, in my head I'm going, would you not be like, you sure you want to do this interview? You seem a bit bummed out about something. You okay?
Well, maybe she expected him to be a professional human being and do the interview and then settle their differences off camera.
So obviously, you know, Brian Pillman's death meant they kind of rearranged who was turning heel here. What did you think of the heel turn? And I'm not going to say him, but do you know what he means by saying he's found someone else?
I assume it leads to the artist formerly known as Goldust. I still don't know exactly what that means.
If any of you try and spoil this for Sondra, you're blocked. Because Sondra, trust me, if you want to hear the glory of the audio... Oh my god. I mean, it gets so good. Not for Sondra, like... but for us. To have to, for Sondra to have to cover this is going to be insane. And then there's a twist that you're going to love. And it's, anyway. So, what did you
But the heel turn, it didn't make any sense. He just comes across like a petulant child. Like, yeah, I hate him for it but he doesn't even seem angry or there's no real reason that he's like, I can't do this anymore. It's not like she did anything. It's not like, you know, he's not even blaming her for going away with Pillman or whatever. I mean, he kind of is, I guess, but it's just, it didn't come across as very emphatic. He just seemed whiny about everything and was like, I have daddy issues and so I don't love you anymore. Okay, like that's what I got from Dustin Reynolds here. It was basically he's upset that his dad and he don't have a good relationship and he also doesn't want to do anything for his wife anymore and he doesn't love her and this was apparently the way to do it, I guess. I don't know. It didn't really click for me. And I felt bad for Terry, I guess, because I was just like, I mean, that would be kind of a blindsiding thing. Just to be like, oh, I thought we were doing this interview on television for the people, and now you're breaking up with me.
It was a thing. I do think, though, that the Goldust...
And also, I think raped her of her dignity was a little, like, a little harsh.
I think, in hindsight, the Goldust turn heel was actually the right move, because he's... I think he's just a little bit unlikable at this point, so...
No, he's a lot unlikable. He's a terrible person. So it's good that he's a heel. The way he turned heel, I hope that it, I don't know, gets better than this.
And it's the end of Terry for a while, so there you go.
Do we not see her?
Nope.
She's just gone?
Mm-hmm. We get a long video package highlighting the Bret Hart Shawn Michaels feud. I thought this video was excellent. It really hyped the match. And then at the end of the promo... you know, they take you through WrestleMania 12 and all that sort of stuff. And Jim Ross says, you know, this match will probably never happen again. And I encourage you to order this history-making event.
That was the first indication, really, that Bret might not be around, right?
Yeah.
Because I don't think they've said anything on TV that would indicate that before, even if you know what's going on. So I thought that was interesting where he was like, and it might not ever happen again. And Bret in this is definitely talking about, you know, the certain lack of masculinity that Shawn Michaels never possessed. And Shawn talks about how he antagonizes everyone and pushes everyone's buttons. And it's kind of very similar to what you read that Bret Hart wrote. Like some of the stuff he said in that, was it a letter, an article?
The Calgary Sun column that he did.
In the Calgary Sun, yeah. He said some of the similar things in this promo. It definitely got across the fact that they hate each other.
We're on the way to Montreal. Then Ahmed Johnson comes out the ring to face Steve Austin, and instead we get Kane. And this is where I turn on Kane. Kane stopped me from getting Ahmed Johnson versus Stone Cold Steve Austin, and that is unacceptable. Unacceptable. Think of the glory that we could have gotten with Ahmed Johnson versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. Imagine
I'm almost
that
a
match.
Little. I know, Kenny. But think about it this way: how good has Ahmed Johnson been in ring lately? It's been terrible, right? Like, it's been disappointing because you think, oh yeah, Ahmed Johnson, he's so great, and then he is awful. I feel like Kane saved the idea of what could have been in our minds. I feel like Kane is really our savior here, because if we would have gotten Ahmed Johnson versus Steve Austin, I don't think it would have lived up to the hype and to everything that we wanted it to be. And plus, Kane's so cool. Like, it's funny because when Ahmed Johnson came out and JR and Cornette are like, you know, oh, he's interrupting, because Ahmed comes out like early, because JR and Cornette are still talking about Brett and Sean and everything, and Cornette's just like, can't he read a format? Can't he, you know, figure out when he's supposed to come out? Can't he wait and come out on time or whatever? And I was like, I bet Kane's going to come out and interrupt this, because I know this match doesn't happen, because there's no way this match happens. And then Kane came out, and I was like, ha-ha!
Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe Kane saved the thought of that match in my head.
Besides, it was pretty cool to see Kane choke slamming and then tombstoning Ahmed Johnson, and
also with,
you know,
with Austin's neck injury, he can't take a Pearl River plunge.
Right. So the drama of the match just wouldn't have worked.
Which is why I find it problematic going forward for years, whenever you have Undertaker and Austin,
because he can't take the tombstone.
Yeah, so you know he can't take it, so it's automatically. Even when I was a kid, I was like, you know, it was problematic for me. But yes, Kane tombstones Ahmed Johnson twice after chokeslamming him. Mankind runs down, puts Paul Bearer on the mandible claw. Then he whacks Kane with like a metal pipe from the boiler room, I guess. Kane goes down, crowd goes nuts. Mankind's trying to get Ahmed out. Kane sits up. Kane grabs a chair. People are trying to keep him apart.
When he sat up, JR goes, just like his brother Taker. I mean, The Undertaker. And it made me laugh.
I thought this Mankind Kane thing was really good. Really got me hyped for seeing them at Survivor Series. That leads us for
I liked it a lot. He knocked out Kane with a huge piece of metal, Kenny. A piece of metal that wasn't bent before he hit Kane over the head with it, but then it was bent. And you know how we know that? Because they focused on it constantly afterwards.
As they should, really.
As they should. It was a big bent piece of metal. And Kane's the coolest, and I love him.
He is great. And then Steve Austin comes out to challenge anybody, including what's left of Ahmed Johnson. He's such a prick.
Cornette's at this point, I dare someone to read a format.
And that, do you know, the thing is, I've been around Jim for so long that, like, that's not a character. He is a man that loves a format. He does not, do not deviate. He had a format when we went on our road trip.
That's not surprising to me.
Which, sadly, I'll never be fucking endorsing. Fuck what culture. Fuck them up the arse. They're fucking shite.
I mean, strong agree.
Anyway. So, Steve Austin is there. The Nation of Domination come out to answer the challenge. Farouk sends Kama down. The Legion of Doom come out. The Legion of Doom and the Nation are brawling. And Austin hits a stunner on Kama and then just gets out of dodge. Because why is Steve Austin going to get in a brawl when he doesn't have to?
He looks so pleased with himself after he stunners Kama and he just walks away and lets LOD and NOD brawl. Mm-hmm. Like, he just looks so pleased about the situation that he's created. I did notice Rocky doesn't have his big R shirt anymore, and the crowd misses it too, because they chanted Rocky sucks quite vehemently.
I love the idea that you genuinely love that shirt.
I do. I want him to wear it all the time. Like, if The Rock came back, like, I never want The Rock to return to WWE television ever, like, ever. But I realize that it's probably going to happen.
Because you will not see The Rock, you will see Dwayne Johnson. And they're two very different characters.
Well, I don't like The Rock either, but because when he's Dwayne Johnson being The Rock, it's still problematic. I still don't like that The Rock is, you know, incredibly homophobic, misogynistic, and runs everybody down, including all of my favorites. So The Rock is problematic for me. If The Rock came back and wore the big R shirt, I might be like, all right, that's fine.
The most niche reference.
It would basically just be for me. It would be 100% for me, which is why it will never happen. But I would laugh, and that would be it.
So yeah, quite a big first hour there. We head out the second hour. Michael Cole brings out Shawn Michaels. He comes out with DX, of course. Rick Rude introduces him. Vince tells us that Bret Hart has refused to be here tonight because of Shawn Michaels' comments. Again, emphasizing, you know, this may be the last time we ever see Bret versus Shawn. Michael Cole talks about Brett, and then Hunter gets involved and says, you know, you've done enough talking. They fuck with Michael Cole. And then Sean gets the mic, says he's a showstopper, the main event, the icon of the WWF, and now he's decided to take it up a notch and call himself a wrestling god. Cue JBL in the background. Helmsley takes the mic and says, to be a god, you actually have to be as old as God. Michaels then plays his European title like a guitar, a la Hulk Hogan, and sends a little message to a particular guy in the other show that you have to be able to walk on water if you expect anybody to watch Age in a Cage. So it's all like anti-Hogan stuff here, which is, you know, I guess just the way it's kind of going. So it's funny to me that Hogan at this point in his mid-40s still wrestles more than Shawn Michaels, but, you know.
Right? I mean, you missed out the part where Shawn Michaels kisses Hunter and then kisses China to resounding faggot chants from the crowd. Because 1997.
Also, the thing is, though, it's not like either of them are really being like, hey guys, being gay is really cool.
Nope.
Like, it's like, being gay makes you a cunt.
Yep, they're like, being gay is the worst. That's part of the problem, though, is that they're encouraging the homophobia to get heat from the crowd, which I'm not a huge fan of. And then, you know, they're basically telling everyone to suck their dicks constantly as well, which isn't going to dispel anything. And it's just, it's annoying, and it just makes me put my head in my hands.
Sean goes on to, you know, he's cut this promo, and then eventually Slaughter
does
comes
baby
out.
Michael Cole not sound like a Dasha Fuentes prototype here? Like, he sounded like
no
he had a
personality.
Glitch.
No personality whatsoever. He's so generic. Slaughter comes out because Sean wants a match with Ken Shamrock. Slaughter comes out to make the match official. But before he starts talking, Sean and Hunter put on face shields with window wipers because Slaughter spits. That was quite funny. I will give them that. I remember it being funny at the time, but I still did chuckle. And then Slaughter says, you know, since you're basically because Sean's goading him all the time, and Slaughter says, you know what, instead of next week, you're going to have the match tonight. And everyone's happy. Sean's pissed. He has to face Shamrock in the Go Home show before the title match.
I mean, he asked to face Shamrock, so why would he be upset about facing Shamrock tonight instead of next week?
Because he's Shawn Michaels and it doesn't make any sense at this point.
Okay, gotcha. I just hate him. I do. I don't like him. I don't like seeing him. I just don't want him to talk.
But he's just a sexy boy.
Ugh.
He's not your boy toy.
Get to fuck.
A pissed off Mark Merrow is backstage and grabs Sable as she literally has her tits out to
now,
bring her to the ring.
Here's the thing with this, right? So Mark Miro apparently, Mark Miro's motivations are very confusing to me, because if Mark Miro doesn't want people looking at Sable and, you know, giving all the attention to Sable, why would he grab her as she literally has her tits out and doesn't have her cat suit like tied up? I mean, if he drags his wife out of her dressing room completely topless, people are going to notice that. People are going to pay attention to Sable. I mean, you can say the same thing with if he's bringing his wife out to the ring with him dressed like that. Obviously, people are going to pay attention to Sable. But especially if she just has her tits hanging out, like, shouldn't he want her to be covered up with this whole pay attention to me and not her thing? Also, why does Sable have her very own dressing room?
There's a lot to unpack here.
Does she really do enough to warrant her own dressing room?
Vince wants to fuck her. She probably has a yacht.
Yeah, fair.
So I think the mindset behind it is that, you know, her job is to accompany him to ringside and to take his robe when required.
And she wasn't ready, and he needed her there now,
yeah,
right?
On his time, not on her time.
Right.
Because she's not the star, he's the star. So he has a match with Savio Vega. Mark Merrow versus Savio Vega. My lord. He gets the win, though, relatively quickly with TKO. And then Sable's being interviewed by Michael Cole afterwards. You know, he's asking her, why is Mark Merrow using low blows? And as she's trying to kind of defend him, Mark Merrow comes over and ends the interview and says, you know, if you want to speak to a superstar, you talk to me. Sable tries waving at fans, but Merrow just kind of quickly takes her to the back.
He also calls Cole Gilligan. I mean, this match was fine. Like, it was Savio Vega.
I'm curious.
Mark
so,
Miro,
how
right?
Talk to me about Mark Merrow and Sable. Are you behind Mark Merrow and feeling that, you know, Sable's taking away his attention, or are you behind?
Behind Sable?
Yeah, are you behind Sable?
I'm a little more behind Sable, actually, because I feel like he's just not treating her well. Like, he's grabbing her arm and, like, kind of chucking her about, almost. Like, he's always, like, hurrying her along and not letting her wave to the fans. And, you know, like, if he's going to have her accompany him, then obviously she just wants to be out there and have attention, because that's what her job is, right? Like, she is accompanying him. It's not like she's not being supportive of him, but she's just trying to have fun too. So can I just say, Savio Vega cuts a promo before this match and he's like, Sable, no puedo esperar a pasar mi mano a tu grande pelo, which means like, I can't wait to like put my hands through your big hair, basically. And as he's making this hand gesture with both of his hands, I was like, what is he gonna say? Like, where is he planning on putting those hands? But then he just said her hair, and I was like, I thought you were gonna go somewhere entirely different with that, Savio Vega, and it was about to get really weird. but yeah, like, I don't know, like, I like kind of into this whole Miro Sable thing. Like, Miro's angry and he's being a dick in the ring too, right? Like, he's constantly winning via low blows and via cheating and just being super angry about everything. I mean, I feel like Mark Miro and Goldust need to just have an angry convention about being raging about having wives or something. I don't really know, but it's interesting, the dynamic between them. I'm not sure how it's supposed to play out. I mean, I know how it does play out eventually, but at this point, it's just like, am I supposed to hate him? Am I supposed to love her? What's supposed to happen? But I do feel kind of bad for her at this point, I guess.
Yeah. It's, yeah. I think the Meryl Sable stuff actually holds up. I was curious how it was going to feel, but I think the story's actually really good. It totally makes sense. I understand Mark Meryl's, where he's coming from. So, we then go to a dog collar match with Vader and the British Bulldog. The British Bulldog accompanied by Jim Neville Neidhart. We find out that Phil LaFon and Doug Furness are back. They're going to be in Team Canada. The match is very, very short. But as Vader basically gets the win quite easily, and then mm-hmm. Team Canada beats down Vader, and then this random karate man comes in to take out Team Canada. And this is the debut of the most boring wrestler in the world, Steve
and one of
Blackman.
The best references of NXT Season 4.
Sure. Steve Blackman has debuted in the World Wrestling Federation to help Vader, as Vader tries to, you know, deal with Team Canada. The refs and the agents and all that, they're all trying to, like, stop this guy. JR says that, you know, this guy's a fan, he's going to get, the authorities are going to take care of him. And so the teams, now I also need to tell you at this point, we have seen the end of the Patriot in the World Wrestling Federation.
Well, because they say he has that shoulder injury or whatever.
And he does, but he never
comes
back.
They need to replace him on Team USA.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, I don't think anyone's really clamoring for the Patriot to come back. Sorry,
Patriot. So we're going to have Vader, Goldust, Mark Meadow, and Steve Blackman against British Bulldog, Jim Neville Neidhart, Phil LaFon, and Doug Furness. I do love that.
Love the idea of a fan getting into the ring and trying to, like, help out Vader and whatnot. And they're all like, oh, a fan's in the ring and that can't happen. And they're going to arrest him and prosecute him to the fullest extent of the law and then put him on the Survivor Series team.
Yes, exactly. It's problematic.
It really is.
So
Furness and LaFon on Team Canada, though. I like that they actually explain that, because it's Furness is American, right? He's the one that's American.
Yeah. I love that on Team Canada, there's only one Canadian.
Yeah. Because, yeah, well, LaFon says that he is Canadian, you idiot, or whatever, and Doug Furness is like...
He's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Doug Furness is mad that he didn't get letters from Americans when they were in a car accident, so he's on Team Canada, too, with his partner. And that's it.
Yeah. So, that's going to be Team Canada versus Team USA. Then we go into Road Dogg and Billy Gunn against Los Barriquas. Oh, my God. Ugh.
Mr. Ass references mm-hmm. for the first time, I think, right?
For the first like time, yeah.
He says Los Barriquas are just a stepping stone for the dog and Mr. Ass.
JR,
today they are the dog and Mr. Ass.
At one point,
large faggot chance again.
Of course,
toward Billy Gunn for having an ass.
JR talks about
To which Vince says, by the way, Vince is like, fans just having some fun, it seems. That's his response to faggot chance.
At one point in this match, what I really enjoyed was JR talks about Eric Bischoff being his former understudy. I enjoyed that, but in the end Road Dogg gets the pin for his team when Billy Gunn ends up like, what is it he does? He does something to Estrada behind the ref's back. I can't remember.
I just, Road Dogg and Billy Gunn win via shenanigans is what I remember.
Basically Road Dogg and Billy Gunn win.
Yeah.
That's the
beat Los Barriquas.
They did. Main event time. Shawn Michaels, the European champion, takes on Ken Shamrock. It's very funny. You can hear Shawn Michaels loudly calling spots in this match, which I've never seen before or since. Which I can only attribute to the fact that Ken Shamrock was new and Shawn Michaels was not willing to have a match with a new person and wanted to make Ken Shamrock do more because it's 1997 Shawn Michaels. Of course, we have the entire D-Generation X involved. Of course, there's nobody to help Ken Shamrock. But still, Shamrock managed to overcome all of them and have the ankle
lock. Because he's the best.
And the ankle lock is cinched in. He's going to get the victory. But when China gets up in the apron from behind, Rick Rude hits Shamrock with the briefcase. Then Helmsley starts attacking him. The referee sees it. DQ. Then Helmsley has a pedigree onto Shamrock. And that's kind of the end of it. Shawn Michaels and Hunter and Rude are beating down Shamrock. And that's the end of the show. And Bret Hart's not there. And a very weird finish to the go-home show. What did you think of this main event? I mean, I thought the match had fun elements to it, but... what did you think of the match and just the kind of how they went off air?
Well, I really liked the match, actually. I thought it was super fun. Like, I liked Ken Shamrock throwing Shawn onto DX. I loved him banging Triple H and Shawn's heads together. Like, it's just ridiculous, but it's fun. You know, China pushing Ken into the ring post at one point. But the wrestling in it is really good because, I mean, for all the shit I give Shawn Michaels, obviously he's a very good wrestler, right? And Ken Shamrock is, you know, he's still newer at wrestling, but he's so intense that I think this matchup worked really well. Like, I liked some of the counters that they came up with really good, like the Hurricane Rana into the corner, or no, the I think he was gonna do a Hurricane Rana, and then Shawn Michaels ends up power bombing Shamrock. I thought that was really cool. And then when Shawn misses Sweet Chin Music and gets a belly to belly for it, and then I think he goes for Sweet Chin Music again, and that's when Ken counters and grabs Shawn's leg and gets him into the ankle lock. The transitions were just super solid and really, really good. And the finish of the match worked. I mean, if you want to go with the disqualification finish, right? Because, you know, Shawn actually taps. He taps out to the ankle lock, but Hebner's all distracted because I think China was talking or something. And then stupid Rick Rude has to hit him with a briefcase. Grr. And then, you know, they pedigree Ken Shamrock onto a briefcase afterward to, I guess, show that DX are strong, which doesn't really make that much sense because it's not like we're leading to DX versus Ken Shamrock. We're leading to Shawn Michaels versus Bret Hart. But Bret Hart's not on the go-home show, which I think is problematic. Like, there was a noticeable absence without Bret and Owen. Like, why was it legit that they just didn't want to be there? Like, why weren't Bret and Owen on the show?
I don't really know the story. I think it's very clear that they're doing everything in their power to cool Bret off.
Yeah, so
He has, like, no heat or fire about him. And, you know, they did the video package, but it's all about Shawn.
Yeah.
I think I remember when I was younger thinking that between Bad Blood and Survivor Series, Raws were really good. And I think they are good. But I think that the main event stuff doesn't hold up as well as I thought, because now that I'm older and I'm watching it back every week, I'm seeing all the plot holes that I never saw before. Especially now that I know what happens. So right. Now I'm watching it going, oh, they're really killing Bret off. Really killing him off. So, it's weird. It's very weird.
Of a flat ending. I mean, I feel like they did a lot more to build to Mankind Kane, or, you know, even Team Canada versus Team USA, I guess. Like, I can't say that this as a go-home show for Survivor Series really worked all that well. I think leading to Austin versus Owen Hart is problematic without Owen Hart as well. Like, yeah, it makes me want to see Austin return. It makes me want to see Austin return to the ring and fight, but... I mean, we know that he's going to fight Owen Hart, but they didn't even have, like, all that much footage of Owen on the show. So, I mean, the two really big matches that they're building to, like Shawn Michaels versus Bret Hart and then Owen versus Steve Austin, I would say are the two biggest matches. Would you agree?
Yeah, no, 100%.
And those were lacking, you know, half the participants in the go-home show. So I think that hurt it.
It did. I also want to take a moment because it's... We have experienced the last ever full show. Well, not even, yeah. We don't get Vince McMahon in commentary ever again. This is it.
Really?
Yeah, this is it. This is the last one. And it's funny, like,
how will we know what a maneuver just happened?
I will go to my grave.
I might not, you know, I might actually start believing that people might kick out at two.
I don't care how much shit people give Vince. I loved Vince as a commentator, and even when I watch back now, he's so ridiculous that I like when he's doing an interview in the ring and he's like, I'm a dresser! I love how he does that shit. I love his 1-2-3-no. Like, I love all his little...
1-2, he's got him, no!
Yeah, I love all his Vinceism, so I'm gonna miss him. And I know that, like, it's almost like the Attitude Era kind of brings in more realism, and I think JR is better for that, because he can be more... I don't know. I feel like JR is the salesman that you believe in more than Vince. Because Vince, yeah, you know, absolutely, is the owner, and it's weird. But yeah, Vince has made me laugh a whole lot over the last 14 months that we've been doing this. So I'm a bit bummed to see him go. But
He's kind of a so bad it's good situation.
Yeah.
Like, he's ridiculous, but it's fun to write down all the weird shit he says.
Very much so. Where would your thumb be for this episode of Raw?
Thumbs in the middle, I think. It, especially considering that it's a go-home show. Because there was good stuff, but I don't know if any of it was great. And there was some stuff that brought it down, like Goldust Marlena and Los Barriquas versus Road Dogg and Billy Gunn was not my favorite. It was just kind of there, I guess. It wasn't bad. And I really liked Ken Shamrock and Shawn Michaels. But yeah, I mean, thumbs in the middle.
I'm going to give this thumbs down.
Are you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to give it a thumbs down.
Wow. Is that the only time that I've rated something higher than you on Retro Raw?
I think it is. Yeah.
Wow.
I just thought, like, I liked the Mankind Kane stuff. I liked the Goldust Marlena stuff. But I just thought having Owen and Brett not there, super local, even though I think, you know, so bad it's good, but still. No Ahmed versus
terrible.
Austin, which is what I wanted. I didn't get it. And then it was all Shawn Michaels, but the worst kind of Shawn Michaels.
Ugh, yeah.
So yeah, down for me. Where can people find you on Twitter, Sandra?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. And if you want to hear more of our comprehensive Survivor Series coverage coming up next week, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. Loads of bonus content coming up there. There's a Fave 5 that David and I did that will be up. Or I think this is being posted on Friday, November the 3rd. So it is up now. And
Go listen. Go and get involved.
Go and get involved. Let us know what you think.
To play us out is a man who we won't see again on Raw, but we're going to hear about him for a long fucking time. Here is the music of Bret the Hitman Hart. We will see you next week, but if you have any sense, you will sign up to Patreon and hear all of our content about Survivor Series. Bye!
Bye!